Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Thursday, August 4th, 2022. Let's talk to our baseball insider, Buster Olney from ESPN. Good morning, Buster. How are you?
I was just thinking, you must be so ready for football. So ready for football.
Oh, hey, I'm up here in training camp. I am in football mode. But as Nate will tell you, I was all wrapped up in the trade deadline. And practice was over. I was done with my afternoon practice report on our afternoon show. And I was sitting, refreshing Twitter, waiting patiently at around 5 o'clock before we went to dinner, waiting for a Royals trade to happen. And as we're getting closer and closer, I was furious that the Royals were not making any moves. And finally, just a minute or so before the deadline, we find out that the Royals traded Whit Merrifield to Toronto, and then later on, the Cam Gallagher trade to San Diego. Still, there's maybe some disappointment that the Royals didn't do enough. So many relievers were traded. Maybe they could have traded and gotten a good return for Scott Barlow or Josh Staumont. But let's talk about what they did do. What was your reaction to the Whit Merrifield trade and what they got back?
Yeah, the first thing I thought of when I saw that trade, and this is, you know, I mean, I spent yesterday debriefing with a lot of executives, a lot of different teams, but I didn't connect with anyone from the Royals. But when I first saw that trade, my thought was that movie 42 about how, you know, the players, if you guys remember, that among the Dodger players in the spring training that before Jackie Robinson joined the Brooklyn Dodgers, some of the Dodger players generated a petition about not wanting to play with Jackie Robinson. And Branch Rickey was so angry, the general manager of the Dodgers, that he promised them, I'm going to trade you. And he not only did he traded them to the Pittsburgh Pirates, the worst team in the league. And I kind of wondered when I saw the, you know, the fact that the Royals worked out the deal with the Blue Jays, knowing what Whit's situation was, I was like, oh boy, like, it, you know, your vaccination stance, is that important to you? Okay, well, good luck dealing with this situation going forward. There were people that I spoke with other teams who were not surprised that the Royals traded him. They felt that, you know, their sense was there was enough lingering anger over what he had done and what he had said, that they were intent on moving him. And you know, the return that they got back, you know, if and I don't pretend to know these, you know, exactly where these minor leaguers are going to land, but what I hear from other teams is that he didn't have any trade value, that he was not someone, as one general manager said to me yesterday about the Blue Jays, yeah, they went and got Whit Merrifield, but what difference does that make? It was fascinating to see how far that he has fallen, and I'm sure Whit has some sense of that, you know, as he moves forward about exactly how much damage he did to the perception of him.
Nate Buchady.
So, wow, that was a heavy statement. What I find fascinating about it, like Buster, I think our reaction here was the same as yours. As soon as I saw it, the Blue Jays, like after everything that happened, the Blue Jays is where he's going. And I keep trying to look up and see. And I know a lot of people here in town have said, look, it's not the Royals' problem anymore whether or not he wants to get vaccinated, so who cares? But I guess I just find it fascinating because that is, in many ways, the genesis a lot of this conversation, where he said if he went to a contending team, he might be willing to change his position. And when I saw that, I thought, well, the Blue Jays must have had some sort of conversation with him beforehand to make sure that he was willing to get vaccinated, or else they wouldn't make this trade. But I just talked to somebody yesterday that said still hasn't committed to getting it, as far as I can tell. And I haven't seen any public comments from that. And I guess the question is, do the Blue Jays even care? Like, I don't know. Like, that wouldn't it seem to be that they would need that assurance before they would make that trade?
Not necessarily. And again, to play it out, because I don't think that what they gave up was, you know, anything steep. But on top of that, okay, play it out, worst case scenario, that the guy, you know, that Witt, like Kyrie Irving, says, you know what, I've got my vaccination stance, I'm not going to play. Then moving forward, what's his salary next year? Like $4 million bucks? Moving forward, they essentially, their only obligation would be to a player to pay him, you know, $2 million. You know, for the rest of this year, it would cut into what actually they pay. So on one hand, they feel like, okay, if he gets vaccinated, great. We have him on our team at a good rate. You know, maybe the Blue Jays feel like that he's just underperformed this year and he'll bounce back and he's a versatile player. And worst case scenario is that it becomes the Kyrie Irving of baseball and refuse to get vaccinated and play in Toronto. Then the Blue Jays go, oh, well, okay. we did, you know, that means it saves us half his salary and he's not going to play in any of the home games. He moved forward. And it did, again, I want to make this absolutely clear. I haven't talked to anyone with the Royals. So I don't know what exactly was behind it, but to me, as they say, it reminded me of that scene in 42, because I felt like that it was almost as if there's someone within the Royals organization didn't feel bad about saying, hey, Witt, that stance is so important to you that you kind of embarrassed our organization. Okay, let's see if you know, you actually will get vaccinated or if you're kind of a hypocrite. We'll see.
Buster Olney from ESPN is our guest. The other trade was more of a minor deal. The Royals traded backup catcher Cam Gallagher for Brent Rooker, who was with the Twins. And at one point, he was looked upon as a guy, a prospect that had a good bat. He's put up good numbers at AAA, but has either battled injury or hasn't been able to get the playing time. Any thoughts on Brent Rooker at all, who the Royals acquired from the Padres?
No, I don't. You know, I haven't dug in that deeply into it in terms of what they got. I mean, here's the thing. And we started talking about, you know, Royals trade pieces back in seemed like late April after they got off to the bad start, we mentioned, yeah, Benintendi had value. And, you know, folks, and we talked about this, Stephen, last week, you know, folks they spoke with felt like they did well in terms of getting depth in that trade with the Yankees. But the other pieces they have didn't have a lot of value. And, yeah, there were a lot of trades made the other day. But, like, Michael A. Taylor, while, you know, he might do some things well, I don't think he's viewed as a difference maker. And keep in mind that, you know, he's someone who's, given how he's performed this year, I don't think there was this big absolute push to get him. I would say this, if you're Camp Gallagher, you're all of a sudden dropping into a team that seems really juiced, and it's a great situation, you know, with the Padres and the lineup they put up yesterday. Didn't surprise me that they had a big first day, because they certainly generate a lot of momentum with what they did at the trade deadline.
You know, it did seem, though, like maybe a missed opportunity, but maybe not. You could tell me what you thought of all of the relievers that were traded. There was a market. There's always a market for relievers, but the Royals decided to hold on to Scott Barlow, and he does have value. He is a good closer,
yeah.
and there is team control of two more years after this, but you know, apparently the Royals didn't like the offers or just decided they were going to hold on to him. But there were many, many relievers out there that changed hands, but he wasn't one of them.
Oh, and I'll tell you this. You know, I had a conversation with someone in the Angels organization yesterday. Raisel Iglesias, their closer, was traded to the Braves. The Braves, again, you know, sneaky winners at the trade deadline as they were last year. Back was, look, pitcher, we like him, but we feel like now's the time to move him because he's going to get a reliever, you know, to fill that closer role for less money. Maybe not as good as Iglesias is, but you can get a guy for less money. So, you know, Barlow, you're right. He probably has some value, but I think that he's
enough down in the pack where it wouldn't necessarily be difference-making value. And the fact is if you're the, you know, if you're the Angels or if you're the Royals and you're projecting ahead to 2023, you're starting to make plans on putting a team together, and you're sort of balancing or trying to figure out whether, you know, he might be worth more to you as projected salary for next year than he than what you're going to get in return in any possible trade. Because you are going to be going into the wintertime, you know, thinking, trying to fill all these spots that potentially you open up with some of these trades.
Nate Buchiti.
All right, Buster, let's talk about some of the rest of the trade deadline activity. And before we get to, like, the biggest names, what about the American League Central itself? How do you see the race in the Central shaping up after the trade deadline business is done now?
Yeah, it feels like all the trades, we talked about this in our trade line show, were proportional to how good the division is. You know, in the National League West, the Padres load up, the Dodgers, because they're trying to catch the Dodgers, who are really good. And then in the American League East, the Yankees load up. In the Central, in the National League, and in the American League, there weren't nearly as many big names that moved. Now, I don't think there's any doubt that the Twins did the best in terms of getting a starting pitcher, making deals, and to plug holes on their roster. And the Guardians really didn't do anything. Well, not really didn't do anything. I'm surprised that the Guardians didn't do more. You know, these teams with low payrolls, and I get it, the Guardians are, you know, that they're a team that's not necessarily going to go out and get the big fish. But I thought that they would be a team that would, you know, add to their depth, and you know, especially in the face of what the Twins were doing. But it and in the National League Central too, I think it was sort of the same, where you had the Cardinals doing stuff, and you know, the Brewers doing some addition, but also some traction, some subtraction by trading Josh Hader. So the divisions that were least active are the weakest divisions in baseball, and I don't think that's a coincidence.
Buster Olney is our guest. Buster, were there any trades that surprised you? It wasn't a blockbuster, but I was surprised that that the Angels traded Brandon Marsh. I know he's having somewhat of a down year, but that's a guy that looked like he was going to be a building block for the future, and they trade him for a catching prospect to the Phillies, Logan O'Hop, and now Marsh is going to get a chance to be the everyday center fielder for Philly, but it didn't seem like that was a guy that the Angels should trade. And if they are going to trade one of their offensive prospects, you know, they always need pitching, I think. So that surprised me. Any trade that surprised you at all that you didn't see coming?
That one, what caught my attention, because remember that Marsh in the wintertime, the Angels, he's so good defensively that the Angels actually decided that they were going to move Big Trout to the corner outfield spot and put Marsh in center field. That's how good he was. And then Joe Maddon to reporters before they talked to Trout that they were thinking about that. And but if the Angels were
Let's put Buster on hold for a second, because that audio is not too audible there. So we'll put Buster on hold, Steven, and try to see if we can get a clearer signal with him, because want to get his answers on this stuff. Were there any big surprises that you saw, Steven, from the trade deadline as we get Buster back on the line?
Yeah, the Brandon Marsh deal, because I didn't know he was available, and that is the guy that I really wish the Royals would have targeted to play center field. I like him. Like I said, he's had a disappointing year, but you heard Buster talking about his defensive ability at center field, and I do think he's going to figure things out. I think the Phillies got a steal there, but that was just like, you know, that's a guy that I didn't know that he was. I mean, he was not a guy that was listed as available, because you know the Angels aren't going anywhere, and he's a young player with multiple years of team control. And I know they traded for Drew Waters, but that's no guarantee that Drew Waters is going to be the center fielder of the future. And so I really, who knew he was available? I guess the Phillies did, but that's a guy which the Royals could have targeted. Okay, go ahead, Nate.
See, we have Buster back here. Buster, sorry, your cell phone was breaking up on us a little bit. You were talking about the trades that maybe could have surprised people this trade market.
Yeah, that one, the fact that they're willing to move him and he's been so highly coveted, but I think what was going on there was the Angels really feel like they have so many holes to fill. They've got a catching issue that they have to address. I was really surprised. It wasn't trades that was made, but trades that weren't made didn't move Wilson Contreras. You guys remember the movie Almost Famous, when it looks like the plane is going down, and all of a sudden everyone on the plane is making confessions. And then you realize, wait, we're not going to crash. And then think about what Wilson Contreras has been doing the last 2 weeks. He's had like 10 hug fests, standing ovation at Wrigley Field, talked about what it's going to mean to leave the Cubs, and guess what? He's staying. Ian Happ was the same way. What he heard from other teams was that the Cubs never relented on asking price on Contreras, which I think probably was a mistake because – it's clear that the other teams didn't value Contreras because his defense is not very good. We talked about Soto. I remember with you guys back in May, and all along we thought that the Padres would be one of the teams that would be involved. They're extremely motivated, but to also get Josh Bell really tells you that the Padres, as they got closer to making this deal and being willing to give up major prospects, that tells you that they had leverage where they could tell the Nationals, look, we'll give up this boatload of prospects for Soto, but you're also going to have to throw Josh Bell into the mix too. And you look at that Padres lineup, it's impressive.
What did you think of the storyline of Eric Hosmer being involved in the deal, then him blocking the trade as far as him going to Washington, and then Luke Voit now having to go to Washington, and then Hosmer getting traded to Boston? That was a fun little soap opera while it lasted.
Yeah, and I feel bad for him because he wasn't getting traded. And then as they got closer to this thing, I think that, Hos this year has actually made really hard contact, but he keeps on putting the ball on the ground. And I suspect what happened was that the analysts within the Padres organization, look, we have to move Hosmer to try to offset some of the salary, but we also are seeing signs that he's just not going to stop hitting ground balls. And they would rather have Josh Bell. And so I felt bad for him because the indication had been for a few months that, no, we want you here. We love having you here. And then to do 180, that kind of stinks. I am happy for him that he's going to go to Boston. Maybe the Green Monster will be a perfect target for him to try to get his swing to a point where he can, pepper that left field wall with line drives.
Hey, Buster, last question for you. So, the Padres, they were the headliners. They did everything that they needed to do to make a run. Did they do enough? Will you pick them now to win the National League?
I think they did enough guys to vault into the upper echelon of National League teams, the Mets, Dodgers, the Braves. In a short series, the Padres can match up with any of them now that they have Josh Hader at closer. Now that you have Juan Soto, a great hitter who can be great pitching in the biggest spots. I actually feel like, and I mentioned the Braves deal for Iglesias, that they did sneaky well. And my pick going forward, and I guess I'm going to take a mulligan for picking the Blue Jays to win the World Series before the year started. They didn't do much before the trade deadline. But I think if I were to redraft, so to speak, I would pick the Braves to win the World Series over the Astros. I think the Braves are absolutely poised for a breakout as we go down the stretch in end October, as long as they keep their starting pitching healthy.
And they added Jake Odorizzi. I thought that was a nice move, trading reliever Will Smith
yep.
for him. Buster, thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
That was Buster Olney, our baseball insider. A lot of moves to try to sift through. And I thought that was a nice under-the-radar acquisition, getting Jake Odorizzi to kind of help round out that rotation and give them an insurance policy in case one of their young starters gets hurt. And they gave up a former Royals reliever, Will Smith, in the deal. And boy, if you do the Padres and you went all in, and I know that Soto is not a rental player, you can, if you're unable to sign him to an extension, you still get him for two more years. But I mean, you got to feel like, I mean, they got to win it, don't they? They got to at least get to the World Series after all that and everything they gave up for Josh Hader and Juan Soto. It'd be a huge disappointment if they didn't. I think as far in as they went.
Hey, if you're a Padres fan, the one thing you can't gripe about is that the ownership and the management of the Padres are not trying. I mean, boy, they have been trying. I mean, they've been adding big name after big name for years now, trying to catch the Dodgers. And it's just, that's a hard thing to catch. The Dodgers seem to have a limitless budget and a great farm system and all the other things they need. So if they were in another division, you'd feel really, really good about things, but the Padres have to try to contend with the Dodgers. So that's going to be a fun one to watch down the stretch. The National League East between the Mets and the Braves is going to be fun to watch down the stretch. And the American League East, where every single team is .500 or better, is going to be interesting as well. The AL Central, not so much. Not quite as, I don't know, not quite as, but you know what? There's three teams above .500 in the Central. Three out of the five. So,
hey, couple of tweets have been sent by Marco Marquez, producer of the Border Patrol. Ooh. I mentioned Drew Waters. Hey, look, this is what you're crossing your fingers for and hoping for. Since he's been acquired by the Royals down in Omaha, his slash line is .317, .411, .619. That'll play.
All right. Take all
right.
That.
There's it. Right? Okay. So there you go. That's positive. And this is, I don't think this is a positive, but maybe you will. Marco seems to still be fixated on Tyreek Hill's podcast.
Uh-oh.
I don't know if you are, Nate.
No.
You're still, no?
I never really have been, but his podcasts seem to keep coming to me.
Well.
I haven't actually
Marco,
sought
yeah.
one
no,
out yet.
Marco has made sure that his podcast keeps heading in my direction. Marco, would you like to play this clip before we break?
Yeah.
Since you sent it to me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Marco likes to dig up some content that might irritate people. So here, oh, look at this. The guest on It Needed to Be Said, this is a preview of Byron Pringle's appearance on It Needed to Be Said. Let's hear what Byron Pringle had to say in this clip with Tyreek Hill.
You gave blood, sweat, tears. You know, you basically gave everything you had to the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, showed up on time, no complaints, no excuses. How hard was it for you to leave Kansas City Chiefs and go into this new space with the Chicago Bears? How hard was that? You know, after everything you done gave the Kansas City Chiefs.
Man, it was hard. At first, I'm like, man, I hope I get re-signed back to Kansas City Chiefs.
Right.
But then I know it's a business deal at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So I always wasn't that, like, upset about the situation because one door's closed, another one open.
There you go.
Another one open. And when the Chicago Bears called and my agent was able to work out a deal with them, something they can, I know that I feel comfortable with, like doing, accomplish. I said, it's time to go. And we went back to Kansas City with the deal. And they were like basically saying, thank you, Byron Pringle. And
that's all they said, thank you.
Thank you, your watch, like a partner.
How long? Time out.
Thank you for your service. You're dismissed?
Like, no, what? They
gave you a postcard?
Yes.
Yeah, they gave me a card.
You playing? No. Like, for real, like a farewell card. They gave you a farewell card?
Yeah, they did. They sent it to me.
I didn't get no card.
Oh, my God.
Pringle got a card. Pringle got a card and Tyreek Hill didn't.
Oh, my God.
What?
Nate,
what's wrong with you?
There's also a new Aaron Rodgers story today, in case you're interested.
I don't know.
This is right in Nate's wheelhouse today. What is wrong? What is wrong with you?
My face is melting by the stupidity that's infiltrating my headphones.
He didn't get. You don't think it's funny that Pringle got a card and
well, that part's great. Yeah, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Who do you think gave him the card?
I don't know. Veach. Does Veach write, like, does he have like a box full of Hallmark cards? Thank you. Congratulations.
That's what I want to know.
You're moving on. Like one of those cards. You're moving on. Hey, Byron.
Is it like one of those cards that has a song and you push the button? Like, it's so hard to say goodbye. Play that song.
Those cost twice as much. Those things are overpriced, you know? I'm not going to spend $10 on a greeting card that's going to be thrown in the trash 10 seconds after it's opened up.
I like buying the cards where you open up and it plays a song.
Or like the one that's like, opens up and it's Darth Vader, happy birthday, the force is strong with you, you know?
So was it like, did it open the card and say, we will not match this contract offer? See, yeah, he opens the car, and that's
it's the end of the road.
That's good. See, that would be a good card. I'd be happy if I got that card.
That is nice.
I like how him and his team went back to the Chiefs. It's like, all right, here's what Chicago offered us.
Nope.
She said,
bye-bye.
Thank you.
So then what were you so exasperated about?
Just like, what is it? I don't even want to get triggered.
I do.
You gave your blood, sweat, and tears for this organization, and that's all they said was thank you? Well, no, they also scratched out $3.8 million worth of checks to you. That you didn't give it. You didn't give your blood, sweat, and tears. You exchanged it for $3.8 million. I mean, like, and I don't begrudge. I'm good for Byron Pringle. He deserves that $3.8 million.
And they gave him a card.
Yeah, and they gave him a card, too. But, like, what does Tyreek Hill think that the organization owes you after all that that's a transaction.
Jesse Newell just walked in. He's going to walk right out if he finds out what we're talking about.
I just, like.
Listen. Byron Pringle got a card and Tyreek Hill didn't. That's the only takeaway.
That's the only takeaway.
That's all I care about.
I just like a type who wants us all to feel sorry for Byron Pringle because of how much he just donated to the Kansas City Chiefs for zero compensation, and all he got was a thank you. No, he got a thank you and $3.8 million.
Also, I'm a fan of Brent Rooker now, who the Royals acquired from the Padres. He's on Twitter. Someone had tweeted to him like a couple of days ago, at Brent Rooker. Brent underscore Rooker 12. We need to get you out of San Diego. It'll be forever before you get a call up, especially with all these players the Padres just signed. You can make a huge impact with another team. And he retweeted and says, well, boy, do I have news for you. And then yesterday he tweeted, sup at Royals. I like that.
Sorry, I'll do it.
Exactly. I like that. So, Brent Rooker, come on down. We will take a break. When we come back, we have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star inside Barely's Bar inside the wonderful Stony Creek Hotel and Conference Center. We'll be back after this on WHB.
Yeah, so the blocking part is one-on-one blocking. We give them some parameters that they've got to work within to get it done, but it's great for the rushers, the defense, and it's great for the backs and tight ends to work their angles as they work into that block and then their fundamentals. So it's a productive period. Then we jump in and we do one-on-one pass from there. Again, give them parameters to work in and in a clock. So we're not just going to hang on to the ball all day till they get open. They've got to do it within time. So, and again, that's good for both sides. Again, now defense working angles on that and offense trying to set things up according to the route that's called.
Welcome back to the show. That was Andy Reid after practice, indoor practice yesterday. And right now we're joined by Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star, live here at Stony Creek Hotel and Conference Center in St. Joseph, Missouri. What's up, Jesse? How are you?
Doing great. How about yourself, Steven?
How do you like the makeshift broadcast studio we've set up here?
You know, I was just looking at this. Sometimes, you know, if you watch football and you think, man, there's a lot going on. I don't really understand all of it, but I still enjoy the process. This is kind of what this setup is. There's lots of wires, lots of things. Like, I have no understanding of what's going on and the magic of getting us back to the airwaves and to people in Kansas City and all around, even in St. Joseph here. But you did some great work here, Steven. I just want to tell you that.
You know what? I will pass along the credit. My wife set this up today because I'm dealing with a very bad back, and she's learned enough where she can – I tried to hire her on the air, and she said no.
Wow.
But, yeah, there's – you know, this is new equipment – that I'm still getting used to, but she kind of has an idea. But we put it, got it on the air, and it's actually really good. It's great. And so, yes, it does look like high technology, and so like a science experiment over here. But we are on the air back in Kansas City, and we've talked a lot about today some of the camp darlings that have surfaced, and you know. Justin Watson, boy, everyone's talking about him. And we played all his comments, and he was fun to listen to, especially talking about Mahomes and his relationship with Mahomes and what Mahomes does to kind of help teach the receivers. But this is a guy that's been mentioned by Mahomes. He's been mentioned by Dave Tobe now. He could replace, you know, Marcus Kemp as far as special teams. He said he could be their emergency guy in punts. He can catch the punts, which has been an issue so far in camp. And he's got good size and speed. And so if people are looking to look at a new face that has a good chance of making the team, he's one of them. And then Isaiah Pacheco has been mentioned by everybody, even though I sent a clip out inadvertently yesterday of him muffing a punt as soon as we pumped him up. But so those two guys, that's not just the media or fans falling in love with a guy getting a bunch of reps up here at camp. Those two guys right now, as Tope said, Pacheco right now is the kick returner. It looks like they have inside tracks to roster spots.
Yeah, and you talked about the reasons too. If Dave Tope mentions you in that sort of way, like he's relying on you, usually that's a pretty good indication that you've got a good path to a game one or a week one game check. So yeah, I mean, you know, Watson seems like he was pretty open yesterday about the Chiefs and knowing that their special teams was good, always preparing for them in Tampa Bay, and knowing that the emphasis that the Chiefs put on it here, and he seems like the perfect guy for that. Has some speed, has some size, is able to be, you know, help out in those areas, and then right now, kind of a nice fit, you would think, on the either fifth or sixth receiver spot, where the Chiefs are pretty set at the top four. You know, you right now, based off what we've seen and what we've kind of thought going into the year with the Juju and MVS and Sky Moore and McColl, you hope, if you're the Chiefs, you don't need much more than that. But we kind of heard Justin Watson talk yesterday, hey, if I can just be that next guy in, if they need a break, if they need a snap, then I can step in there and do that. And then obviously up on special teams, that seems like a really nice role for him. And having the chemistry with Mahomes by going to Texas, and Mahomes talked about him over the summer saying, hey, I called the beach and said, who is this guy? You know, how fast is he? Because I'm late on my throws, that sort of thing. It seems like a nice complimentary piece. And I don't know about Pacheco being complimentary. I think that's sort of still unknown, but they do like him on kickoff return. It makes some sense sort of in the Nile Davis mode, where you have a big dude who has some speed. Now, you know, you see from all these things and you see with your own eyes, last week he was getting some first-team reps with the guys. He can catch the ball in the backfield. He's that 4.37 speed at the combine, tied for the best of any running back, and he's got some size at 210, 215, somewhere in that range. So I think the Chiefs are kind of letting him decide his own destiny here, and it just adds intrigue to that running back room. But at the very least, you talked about it, Steven, being able to return kicks. That gets you on the team. That helps you get your foot in the door. But that's sort of the conversation we've talked about a few weeks ago with running backs. Sometimes these guys can emerge and be very good. We've seen the Chiefs have history with seventh-round picks, undrafted guys in that role. We'll see how high Isaiah Pacheco can ascend here and how much of a role he'll have this season on offense.
So Pacheco's on the team. You know, Clyde's on the team. McKinnon, Rojo, are they both on the team? Or could we see one of those names either cut or traded a la Carlos Hyde a couple of years ago?
Yeah, that's the question. And, you know, talked with Brett Veach last week about this sort of thing, and he was pretty open and honest, saying like the running back room is one of the most interested parts of camp that, you know, he's looking into right now. It's just he wants to see that competition play out, and I think the timing of this sort of makes it weird. You know what I mean? Because they signed Ronald Jones really early in the free agent process, and they didn't know what McKinnon was going to do. Then McKinnon comes back to them. And then, you know, they saw all these guys in the draft. And again, in the seventh round, if you're taking the guy who had the fastest 40 time out of all running backs who has some size to him on a seventh round dart throw, you feel pretty good about that. So it's sort of like the Chiefs kept kind of taking advantage of opportunities, if you will. So, yeah, that'll be something to watch. Can they keep four running backs when you have potentially four tight ends and a fullback and six wide receivers? You know, that's the question. Can you squeeze all that onto your roster? I'm not sure the answer is yes with that, but, yeah, it seems like they like McKinnon in the passing game. Ronald Jones has sort of been up and down. He was with mostly the twos a couple days ago, but then the last, 2 days ago when we had the open practice at the fields, he was back with the ones, and it sort of makes sense with the full pads. You know, like, Ronald Jones is not going to wow you in the pass game. He's not going to wow you with his hands. He's not going to wow you with that sort of stuff, but sometimes when he can get one cut and go and get upfield, and I wrote about this offseason, sometimes the Chiefs would block for 4 or 5 yards, and they'd get 4 or 5 yards last year.
Right.
If he can get one cut, get upfield, and get 8 or 9, that not only changes the Chiefs, okay, now you're 2nd and 1 or 3rd and 1, it changes the philosophy if you're Andy Reid or if you're Patrick Mahomes saying, hey, that 9 yards worked, 4 yards didn't work, and all of a sudden you're back into being pass-happy mode. So I think there's things he can do to help, but he sort of, at least at this point, seems very limited with the other stuff he can do. Can he pass protect? That's been a struggle in the past. Can he catch the football? I don't think you're going to rely on him for that. But, you know, when these drills have turned to pads and they've turned to red zone, that's been a lot of Ronald Jones. So, like I said, it's sort of – if Brett Veach told us a week ago that, this is a competition he's very interested in and wants to see how it turns out, then I believe him, and I believe that they're going to continue to watch this and see how it plays out.
Nate Bucati, you're on with Jesse Newell.
Jesse, good morning. How are you, man?
Doing all right. Nate, how about yourself?
Good. I got a couple questions for you on this running back situation. Number one, I've asked this of a couple people. The Pacheco thing is, to me, one of the biggest stories – from camp, from somebody that, you know, for sitting on the outside and not being there, everybody keeps talking about how good he looks, and then they bring up 215 pounds, runs a sub 4.440, and that makes me wonder, how does a guy with that type of size speed combination fall to the seventh round in the draft?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? So this does remind a little bit maybe of, I mean, Jamaal Charles wasn't that big, but it seemed like he sort of slipped to the third round, and he had the speed, and he showed up, and you're like, what was wrong with this guy? And, I've got my analytics book here. I brought it here just for Steven, just so he could see it.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you have to wait another week, Nate. But I think it goes back to the conversation we've talked about a little bit with the running backs, which is there were some guys at the top of this list that most people were in on, you know, the Breece Halls of the world, and this maybe wasn't the best running back crop of NFL draft, and I'm not going to sit here and act like an NFL draft expert because I'm not, but it's the conversation we've had before. There are so many guys that can be productive that maybe look about the same that the running back position just isn't one that's highly valued, because if you're using the second round, third round, fourth round pick on that, other teams are not. You know what I mean? Unless you're getting the very, very top or the guy that you really love in a Breece Hall or whatever the case may be. So I don't know. I probably need to dig more into Pacheco and see what were the warning signs with him and what he didn't produce at the college level that led him to be available at this point. But I think it talks to a bigger picture with the Chiefs right now, which is probably the biggest story of camp, is that these rookies – are all looking really good. And again, it's early, pads just came on, things can change, but I was sort of thinking about this. You know, they trade away Tyreek Hill and they get these picks and they clear up their cap situation. And on most drafts, you're hoping four guys hit, five guys hit, something like that. And we can go down the list, but we can mention almost every name for the Chiefs that's a rookie right now. They've either met expectations or are somewhere close to it, or they're very much exceeding it, which you can say about three or four guys. So this has to be an exciting time in the same way kind of for the Royals, where they have all these rookies they're bringing up, and you're thinking, okay, maybe these four or five guys can be the future for a while. For the Chiefs, man, if this really resets what they are as a team and they have these young guys for a long time, we could be looking back to this offseason, this draft, and saying, wow, that was really something that Brett Veach pulled off, if this was what led the Chiefs to sustain success because they took a step backwards and decided to trade Tyreek Hill.
So I looked up a name that popped into my head, but because I've been thinking about Pacheco a lot, is Nile Davis. If you remember when the Chiefs drafted him, he was listed at 225 pounds and ran a 4.37 40. And he never really put it together as a running back. And because the reason I thought of him was because I think one of the people we talked, I can't remember who it was, but somebody we talked to said maybe the thing that Pacheco might be missing is a little bit of that shiftiness, the ability to evade tacklers. He's kind of more of a north and south guy.
Hey, Nate.
Yeah?
Did you think of him because Jesse said Nile Davis? Maybe? Or not?
No. I'm sorry, guys. I missed that part. I heard you talk about Jamal Charles. I was listening to everything you said. Did you just say Nile Davis just now?
Yes.
Oh my God.
No, I said it earlier. Hey, he's gonna help on kick returns.
Yeah.
You know, kind of in the Nile Davis mode for the Chiefs. You know.
Damn it! It's hurting my back. I don't want to laugh.
Son of a
bitch! You should have seen.
Oh my God.
Jesse was just sitting there. And then you said, I don't know, I think it was somebody earlier we had on the show. They said now, Davis said, I'm like, looking at Jesse. I don't know if he's jacking around or not.
Oh, my God. I'm just going to go home now.
No, finish your thought.
Did you realize he ran the exact same 40 time?
I did not.
So there you go. See, I'm adding something to the conversation here.
Right.
Well, listen, that is a good cautionary tale, Nate, because you're right. I mean, Nile Davis was a decent kickoff returner, but never really made it as a running back for the Chiefs. But you do see some of the hype. I mean, if anybody who – I know you guys follow this when you're on Twitter, and anybody who pops into camp for a day or two that's a national person and tweets out their five things to watch or five things to think about – Isaiah Pacheco's on every single one.
Right.
So you know exactly what's going on there. Those guys are dipping into Brett Veach's office. They're talking to him for 10 minutes and saying, hey, I need something. Can you give me something I can throw out there to the fans? And, again, that's what I'm assuming is happening with this because that's usually what happens with this. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, I saw some comparisons to Kareem Hunt, and I'll listen, that's going a little far. You know what I mean? Like that, if they hit a Kareem Hunt at the seventh round pick in the draft, then that would be a grand slam out of the park. You know, that would almost be close to getting 50% of the way to making the draft class by itself. But I think you're right, Nate. I mean, that there is something to be said about, hey, it's a big dude who can run, and you think about all his measurables and what it takes to be running back, and you think there's got to be something missing there. Again, from the people right now that watch him and the people right now that are the most important, they're seeing some things from Pacheco that they really like. So he's – And if they don't, and if it doesn't work out, again, he could probably be a good kick returner, which is what Nile Davis was for a while for the Chiefs, and it's the something as the seventh round pick. But it's fascinating because, like I said, he's kind of part of a bigger picture here, which is usually not every draft pick works out. But if your seventh round picks are hitting and are the kind of talk of camp, then all of a sudden you're setting yourself up for something in the 2022 season and maybe future and beyond that you didn't expect before.
Shane Summers just texted me and said, I think a good guy for Pacheco might be Nile Davis. Can't remember. Can't remember who said
that. Oh, that's going to be thrown in my face for years.
To your point, Jesse, I'm looking at – so Albert Breer was at practice yesterday.
There you go.
You know, authors, the Monday morning quarterback. His headline, Chiefs training camp, rookie running back making case for carries in crowded backfield.
There you go.
Isaiah Pacheco looks good enough to take away playing time from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Ronald Jones, and Jerick McKinnon. So he was told that. Now, here are the other things. Juan Thornhill finally healthy, looks like a much more versatile player. Corner's going to be interesting with all the young faces and how Josh Williams and Jalen Watson will look good. And Trent McDuffie looks excellent. But something, and he said Patrick Mahomes, more ownership over the offense, all that. But then he mentions, and so this is and also before I forget this, look at Pacheco's numbers at Rutgers, and maybe just Rutgers sucked. But he averaged like 3.7 yards per carry last year. And so that it's also, you know, the production was not there for him. And I think he only averaged I don't know, 4.3 for his career. Last year, 647 yards, 3.9 yards per carry, and only 13 catches for 25 yards. So he averaged under 2 yards a catch. And so maybe there's your reason right there. It's just the production. But it was Rutgers, and I can't tell you what their offensive line was like. I can't imagine it was very good. But getting back to what else Albert Breer said, right tackle. One of the things he mentioned was right tackle is one of the biggest question marks of camp. With Lucas Niang on PUP, you've got Andrew Wiley still as a starter. Mike Remmers is gone. But Kennard is one of those rookies that you talked about. What are we looking at? Is it Wiley until he's ready? What about the battle at right tackle?
Yeah, so, I mean, the Chiefs had, correct me if I'm wrong, 10 draft picks. I mean, out of all of those, I would say Kennard probably has, I don't want to say has not met expectations, but he's been the least buzz right now. And I would say Wiley basically at this point has that spot secured. And that would make sense with that just because we haven't seen Kennard much in practices with the first team or at all with the first team. We've seen him with the second and third mostly. So, and again, I mean, you have to be fair to him because not everybody's Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith and walks into the room immediately performs like a first round pick in their first year when, you know, they were second and sixth round draft or fifth round draft picks. So, yeah, it's a little unfair for the Chiefs to just believe you can sprinkle their Chiefs magic pixie dust on them and immediately they're going to be the starter at tackle. But I would say out of the entire class, he's probably the one that had some expectations at some point. People thought, hey, maybe you can plug and play and put him in there at right tackle. He can compete for that. I would say right now we just haven't seen it yet. I mean, things could change over time. But out of all the rookies, I would say that would be the one more than any other where it might take some time, might take some development, and that's the one that hasn't emerged like many people might have thought.
Man, I'm looking at this list of rookies that they drafted. Like you said, Trent McDuffie has looked fantastic.
Met expectations. I mean, he's been on the outside and first team every rep. So, again, he's just what they thought.
Karl Loftus.
I mean, everybody speaks highly of him. We heard Frank Clark talk about that and how, you know, he's learning these post moves, just a sponge, wants to learn. And then he went in the offseason and tried to get better with his flexibility, which was kind of his biggest weakness coming in. So we'll see how that plays out, too.
Sky Moore.
Sky Moore has to be considered one of the surprises of camp. You know, has battled the hamstring in OTAs and then the hip here recently. But he's been getting first team reps. Talked to Patrick Mahomes here not too long ago, and he said, hey, Sky Moore sits behind me in the film room, and certain concepts come up, and he's asking really intelligent, high-level questions, which makes me confident in his ability to pick things up. So, again, another one of those guys, if he can stay healthy and, you know, ward off this hamstring and hip thing, which he did in the last few practices, then, yeah, I think that he could be contribute maybe a little bit earlier than everybody anticipated.
Brian Cook.
Yeah, Brian Cook is a guy. He comes in their dime package, and we'll see how the Chiefs do it. But them having three safeties, I think, is something that they wanted to be able to have some versatility there to, you know, move some things around and disguise some coverages. But talking with Brett Veach last week, he was talking just about the intelligence of Brian Cook. They've been very wowed by that and his ability to pick up the defense. So, again, I wouldn't say that he is, you know, out there for everything. But, again, in those dime looks, he's going to be out there or has been out there so far, and they like how quickly he's picking up the defense.
A couple of days ago, Leo Chenal had a hit on, I think it was Rojo, and I thought Herbie Teope was going to cartwheel out of the media tent. I mean, it was, you know, Brad G had to settle us down in the media tent. And so I think Leo Chenal has been counting down the days to wearing full pads, and he's loved it.
Guy that's going to look way better in pads, you're right. And he's been filling in run gaps when the pads have come on and done it very well. I would say at this point, probably Elijah Lee is ahead of him, but I don't know that would necessarily be a permanent thing. And if nothing else, I mean, Leo Chenal is a perfect guy special teams. You know, he'll help you on special teams. He'll help you and that's, you know, that'll be their base package as a strong side linebacker. They won't always need that, obviously, with the pass happy offenses, but the fact that he's emerging as of late in the last couple of days, that's a positive sign. I would have said a week ago he might have been behind some of the other rookies, but lately, again, he's been making plays, he's been making big hits, and he might be getting closer than we think with getting those first team reps.
We already mentioned Kennard and Pacheco, but three defensive backs. Joshua Williams has looked terrific. And then you got Jalen Watson and Naz Johnson.
Yeah, so Joshua Williams, I told you last week, I said he was kind of one of those guys that has stood out. Now, the interesting thing is, if you watch practice 2 days ago, he had moved back outside the first team reps and in had stepped Jalen Watson. So, again, pick your rookie here, right? Because, I mean, Joshua Williams had impressed so far and seemed really good up in camp. And, again, maybe a surprise as a fourth-round pick. But then he got replaced in the first-team rotation by Jalen Watson, who was their seventh-round pick. So all of a sudden, if you're on the back end of this cornerback roster battle and you're seeing these rookies emerge and getting first-team reps and knowing that the Chiefs like them and have something invested in them, oh, boy, you know, this might not be as good of a spot as you might have thought right before. Nazee Johnson, I haven't heard much from him, honestly. So, again, that would be another one. But a seventh-round dart throw, we heard Brett Veach talk about, you know, if you're going to have these seventh-round picks and they weren't going to get many cornerbacks to sign with the Chiefs because it was already a crowded room before we knew what was going to happen with Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams, you take them in the seventh round so that they come with you, you know, maybe you get on the practice squad, that sort of thing. So I haven't seen much from him yet, but that's a lot of – again, it's early. The Pats just came on, but that's a – we just talk about 7 or 8 hits so far, nobody that's really played themselves off the radar. If you get 7 or 8 contributors out of a draft – all of a sudden, I mean, a step back, a big picture. You look at the Chiefs' defense. What if McDuffie, young, Karlaftis, young, Bolton, young, Gay, young? I mean, all of a sudden you got all this cost-controlled young guys, and you have them for years and years. That could be the start of something pretty special for the Chiefs.
I know we have to break, but Nate, has Jesse's enthusiasm for this draft class piqued your interest about training camp at all?
Absolutely, and I have comps to every single one of those guys that I want to run by Jesse at some point. No,
I run them by you first, Nate? Can I do that?
let's take a break. Let's hear from Gary Lezak and find out what the weather's going to be like at camp after this on WHP. If not for yourself, then those around who care like I do. One day you'll see the clear. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Let's find out what weather we'll be dealing with over at Missouri Western State University for Chiefs training camp. Gary, what's St. Joe going to be like?
89 degrees today at training camp. What is the average high temperature for today? 89 degrees. So a typical summer day. Now, we do have some stratus clouds this morning, these low clouds. But no chance of rain. It's going to be a great day to be up at training camp. If you're heading on up there, it's going to be fantastic. Light winds, an east to northeast wind at about 7 miles per hour. That's it. So not much wind. Great day. Put on the sunscreen. Get out there and see the Chiefs get ready for the season. And then tomorrow, 92, 95 on Saturday, 96 on Sunday. Another little front next week. We should drop back into the 80s Monday, Tuesday. So just great summer weather. I didn't realize Sky Moore had 2 Y's in his name. Sky with 2 Y's. Did you know that?
That's why instead of, you don't say Sky, you say Sky Moore.
I say Patrick, you say?
Mahomes.
And Sky Moore. Amazing.
But no rain's important because fans couldn't watch yesterday. Practice was indoors, but no threat of rain, so practice will be outside today. Right, Gary?
No threat of rain. Now, do you have your headset on? Because I'm out of time. Because you were did you get the wrap? Did you get that wrap, Stephen?
Yep. Just making sure.
All right, well, thank you. It's okay. It's all I have for today. It's a cloudy morning. The sun's already breaking through. The stratus clouds will break up, and it's going to be a beautiful summer day. And I will check in with you on KSHB 41 on this Friday Eve. It's going to be a great day. So get out there, get up, get going, and enjoy it. I'm on my way to work out. Today is back, trap, shoulders, and I'm going to hit it hard.
Hit it hard, Gary. Back, traps, and shoulders. We'll be right back after this with more from Jesse Newell on WHP.